Going back to the X-Men thing, this is just Apocalypse.
Those weak will survive. The mutants shall overcome once I have them all killing each other.
Yeah, that's just Apocalypse.
It was the year of fire takes.
The year of deconstruction.
The year we took down Deep Space Nine.
It was the dawn of a new show.
The year of a great journey.
The year of deadlines.
And the year of joy.
It was a new season.
It was the end of another.
It was the year everything changed.
The year is 2026.
The name of the show, you gotta check this out.
Welcome back to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre and a special guest. Don't worry, we will announce them very much like a Royal Rumble entrance soon. But we are knee deep in season 4 of Babylon 5, which we do think you gotta check out. Hopefully you've listened to past episodes. If not, we are going to be discussing episode 6 of season 4, Into the Fire, a shockingly important episode that happened way earlier than I remember. And for this auspicious occasion, we had to get a special guest. Who'd we get, Mike?
We got Logan Trent coming from the Wrestle Movie, a podcast on Gamefully Unemployed, and from a WNBA podcast.
Hello. Yeah, WNBA over on the You Don't Even Like Network with our friend Adam Todd Brown. So, yeah, and Gamefully Unemployed, if you're listening to this, you probably know what that is. Thanks for having me for Babylon 5.
Thanks for being on here. And we got you hopefully a much better episode than we got over to David a couple of weeks ago. We gave him the worst episode of Babylon 5. This might be one of the best episodes of Babylon 5. We'll find out as we go, because this one closes off two huge arcs we've had on the series so far.
Yeah, and so, as mentioned, we're in season 4. Best advice, if you're not doing a watch-along, this is the premise of You Gotta Check This Out. We handpicked our favorite or most important episodes from each season, and Grey 17. I don't regret it, Mike. And so, like I said, normally we do give a little bit of a backstory or catch people up from the last episode, but I thought what would be fun, since this is the climactic episode of The Shadow War, Logan, from this being your only episode, we're going to give you first crack at explaining what the hell is going on, and then Mike and I will tell you how close or far away you were.
Previously on Babylon 5.
Okay, so leading up to this, Sheridan, who is the dude from Tron, is leading some type of ambush attack on the two warring factions that have been leading the entire galaxy in a war and getting every single race caught up in their BS. Meanwhile, over on the planet with the terrible hair, you have the guy who looks kind of like Penguin if he was a Shi'ar member, has
Penguin
assassinated.
Shi'ar. How have we gone this far without doing that, Mike? Penguin Shi'ar. Yes.
Yeah. He has assassinated or been in some type of plot that has led to the death of an emperor, which is now he is the new emperor. And he has this right-hand guy, and they're discussing the different plots that have happened. Because he is now the new emperor, somebody comes in and he tells him about a past thing, which happened in previous episodes, involving the death of his girlfriend or his companion, who used to be a dancer. And it's one of those things like Tyrion and Shay in Game of Thrones, where it's like he fell with her. She got poisoned. It turns out he thought this whole time that the assassinated emperor guy was the one who ordered her death. It turns out it's this other D-bag who, spoiler for the episode we're about to go into, has been using him just to get closer to put the ships of one of the two warring factions, the Shadow Ones, on his planet. Because he did that, the other faction is pissed and wants to kill him and destroy the entire planet. So that's a whole situation independent of that final stand that those two are having. And up into this episode, I don't know if these have been major players or not, but we find out that there is a race called like the First Race, which are the original race that led everybody's races. And they've suddenly made an appearance, and they're trying to get one of those captured so that they can find out the truth as to what is the thing that has caused all of this war to start out. that's where we come into this episode, with one of those members of the first race talking to Sheridan and his crew and kind of telling them the story as to why we're having this war and what the actual stakes are.
Wow, that is very close. I would say the only thing you got wrong is that Londo was appointed the new prime minister instead of the emperor. But it's pretty much the same thing. I don't think anybody could have said it
better.
I'll
give Mike the pedantry points for bringing that, because, yeah, he is. There is, to stay on Mike's side here, there is even a brief joke, because he is the interim prime minister, and at one point he sits on the throne, and they're like, you're not allowed to do that yet. By the way, noticing that this does have the Tyrion Shay subplot in it ahead of that is amazing. We got to give JMS a lot of credit. There are a lot of plot points that preceded a lot of things. He preceded the Matrix by 4 or 5 years, even including some looks. Richard Mole, Two-Face from Batman, was in it, dressed like Blade and Neo, just randomly, which is wild. So the fact that the Tyrion Shay subplot of that exact thing, a royal person falls in love below their class, lied to about what happened, and that messes them up and puts them on a self-destructive turn, and they find out after the fact that they were lied to. A plus, the only minor things, they weren't trying to capture the first ones there, and there are tiers of that. If we think Star Trek, kind of like Prime Directive races. The super oldest one is saying, we've got to get these two to stop fighting, and we need all of the old races out of the galaxy. So he's the oldest guy, the first one, is rounding up all of the first ones because he wants them to leave. They don't need to capture, but he just is kind of, it's, if you really think about it, we have a grandpa alien who's like, my kids are misbehaving. We all need to leave. And my grandkids need to just be left alone, because like my grandkids are 30. They don't need parents anymore.
Yeah. JMS really drives home the multi-generational arc through all of this. That's what he was trying to go for much of it, which we'll see later how much it actually comes across.
Other than that, like I said, I was like writing down points. I give like a 90. This would be an A essay, right? With 5 points off for the capture versus just like, we're all going on a road trip together. Don't worry, we'll get to that in the episode. And I'll agree with Mike, even though I don't want to, the prime minister versus emperor. But amazing work, Logan. Hopefully you're all caught up. Like I said, the easiest thing, if you're doing this proper, is go listen to previous episodes of You Gotta Check This Out. We did tell Logan explicitly, for the love of God, don't do this. Watch this episode blind. We want to hear your first takes, because that's what we have been absolutely loving. And then Mike, I've got a brand new segment I'm going to get to, because we don't have anything else before the episode. It's going to be called Prophecies and Wishes. I'm just going to hop right into that segment because nothing else.
Okay, but no, we got to go right into the quiz before you do anything. Me first for the
what
Dre.
What quiz, Mike? We got a quiz?
The Tally of Winners memory quiz we put our guests through each week. Logan, you said you listened to you watched the episode. I'm pretty sure you did based on everything you said, but let's see how well you do in a quiz. The first category, we're going to do 5 of these. The first one is nerd numbers. At the start of tonight's episode, how many of the first ones does Ivanova say they found so far?
I want to say they found 6.
Ooh, that's very close.
You are such a jerk on putting up this question,
and there's
Mike.
One in the air.
I know what Mike they did. Found, at the start, they say they found 5, and they just about to find the
that's
6th
what I mean,
one.
6. Like that.
Yeah, then you got it right. There's 6 of them right there. You got
By
it right.
Way,
one
sorry,
for
Mike,
one.
This will probably be cut, but I'll add more pedantry points. Here's what's fun. Their CGI budget got cut. So in one of the earliest episodes of Babylon 5, they found a first one like on accident and left it alone. And they like ran out of CGI budget, so they just used them again. So even though technically Ivanova and Mike are like, we've only found 5, we're looking for the 6th, they have found and they just need to wake them up again. I give full points even without Logan explaining he did know what you were doing with your tricky bullshit wordplay, which will come up more later in this episode.
All
not
right,
Mike,
ready for the second category? It's planetary confrontations. Yep. Where do the Babylon 5 forces confront the Shadows and Vorlons? Was the name of the planet they were going to.
Okay, that one I don't actually remember. I know it's not the planet that the Penguin Shi'ar guy is on. It's a different planet. Those are 2 separate planets, because the Vorlon ship that's about to blow it up leaves to go to that area that they're having. That's
that
a different
correct.
Race.
That's good
that
enough to get you a point
about.
Because they're going to Coriana 6, but that's enough about and what's going on with the plot to get a point for you. All right.
Okay.
Next category. Hello, me. It's me again. So between the Shadows and the Vorlons, which race took the form of the other crew members when they were speaking to Delenn and Sheridan?
50-50 shot.
It's the vacuum cleaner, guys. The Vorlon.
No, it's actually the Shadows. The Shadows, for the chaotic nature, was supposed to be shown through trying to be multiple people, while the conservative nature of the Vorlon's vacuum people were trapped in ice as they were telling them to stay the same.
Oh, okay. That explains a lot. So the vacuum people were the ice ones, and the one that was like doing the different, oh, we don't want to hire other actors, let's just have our cast pretend to be this the brood people. Okay.
Yeah, those are the brood
symbolism.
People. Yep. All right.
Okay.
Symbolism. All right. Question four. This is category Shroom Daddy Gandalf. Can you name the old alien that was on the ship acting as Sheridan's mentor?
No. I just know he's a first one. And yeah, I think his name is Firstor.
Firstor? All right, I'll give you a multiple choice if you want it, too.
Yeah.
Firstor was not one of the multiple choices. We have Splorian, Snorfalo, Keegakazor, Lorian, or Chuck?
Lorian.
Lorian. Lorian is correct.
Chuck Lorian, the inventor of Two and a Half Men and Dharma and Greg.
Last category, A Whole New World. At the end of the episode, Lorian goes somewhere with the other first ones. Where does he say they're going?
He says that they're going to the Outer Rim to meet with Gandalf and Frodo and all of the other people from Lord of the Rings that have moved on, and that they're all going to be happy at the end of time, and that when the other people are ready to meet them, they'll be waiting at the Outer Rim with them.
I'd give a bonus point for that.
100%. That's exactly who they're going to meet and why they're going there.
I think I did pretty well since I was inebriated while watching this. So, yeah.
Nice. All right. Dre, you have something else to spring on me, you said, too?
But yeah, so you did the great backstory, but there's more, Logan, that's like series long that I figured I wanted to lead you in on. There are two things that I think are wildly important to give the quintessential backstory you need to enjoy this episode, which is
prophecies and wishes.
And they're both in groups of three. So our main peacock guy, who it's Londo, I will say their correct name, so I'll say Londo Malari is the character I'm talking about, but dear God, Shi'ar Penguin is just too damn perfect. In show lore, he has a vision that he is going to become emperor, and he views this as a curse, correctly so. He has a vision of two things in his life. That is, one, he's going to become emperor, and two, he is going to die at the hands of a lizard guy. Doesn't show up this episode. His name is Jakar, played by Andreas Katsoulis, the one-armed man. One of the best, like, one of the reasons the show actually works. So he's not in this episode, but normally just fantastic. So he has a vision they're going to choke each other to death and that he's going to be emperor. And he's scared of this, and so he gets a prophecy from someone named Lady Morel. We are told that Centauri women, a lot of them are prophets. They can see things in the future. Don't even have time to go into the crazy one that can project visions. And so he gets this prophecy that has three things. She says, basically, you're fucked. You have three chances to avoid your fate. She says, you've already wasted two, but the other three is, you must save the eye that does not see. You must not kill the one who is already dead. And at the last, you must surrender yourself to your greatest fear, knowing that it will destroy you. She basically says, if you pass any of these three, you avoid like going to hell, basically, but you're kind of fucked otherwise. We do know for a fact that he did not save the eye that does not see. There was a character, Jakar, who was tortured and had his eye removed, and Londo did nothing. So he's failed that. We're going to talk about one of the other prophecies. Must not kill the one who's already dead. We'll bring that up later, but I want you to be aware of that, Logan, because I think these prophecies are important. And the other thing we have is wishes. So that creepy guy, the shadow dude that gets killed in this episode that kind of looks like Rod Serling, in season one, he's going around asking everybody on behalf of the shadows, what do you want? Because this is a philosophical conflict that we are told just directly in prose this episode. The Vorlons say, who are you? The shadows say, what do you want? The Vorlons say, figure out who you are and listen to us. And the shadows say, what do you want? And fight each other to prove you really want it. And that's how they're supposed to evolve younger races. But Morden asks a bunch of people, what do they want? He asks Londo, what do you want? Londo's, I want the Centauri to be great and amazing and take over the stars and return to prominence. And it's a monkey's paw situation because he gets what he wants, but the cost is basically his soul. And eventually the entire galaxy is mad at them and is going to team up on the Centauri. That happens later. He asks Carr, what do you want? He says he wants to crush his enemies to dust, but then he doesn't know what else. And then he asks Veer at one point what he wants. And Veer basically says he wants people to realize that some things come with too high a price, and that Mr. Morden to have his head put on a pike to remind everybody of that. So this one I will just get into immediately. All three of these characters do get what they want. But I'm going to argue, you know, it's a very monkey's paw situation, barring
which one is Jakar?
Jakar is a lizard guy played by Andreas Katsu.
Oh, so that's the guy that I didn't see in this episode.
You didn't see him in this episode,
yeah,
but basically
he didn't come in. Go ahead.
Yeah, he wants the Centauri destroyed and Londo crushed. And that does happen, but not necessarily the way he expects.
Because, they do the flashback for that other dude when he starts waving at the head. So
because we do definitely have some arcs getting paid off. We have some prophecies getting paid off this episode. Now you're aware of them when I bring it up. And hopefully Mike puts some music over that, plays it super fast, so it wasn't quite as long and drawn out as we did for you, Logan. But we can get into the show. So Ivanova is our second in command. She's our Riker. And she's hanging out with Lorian, as Mike named, Gandalf. Shroom Gandalf. That is a good name.
Shroom Daddy Gandalf. Because he's the granddaddy of shrooms, Gandalf.
No notes. This is what we already talked in the quiz. Basically, he's saying, we got to get all the first ones. And Ivanova says, we got five. Isn't that fine? He's like, nope, we need six. We need all of them. We need all the first ones. We potentially end up in a Lord of the Rings scenario with nine. Nine is an important number in the show. Because including Lorien, the Vorlons, and the Shadows, and the six remaining first ones, that would be nine, is what it is. But this is the oldest race. That's what's kind of going on. We have this war of galactic proportions of all of the major old races, and the young races trying to say, hey, we don't want any of that. We'll get to that.
A
war in the stars. That does happen. We have characters that are walking among the sky.
Yeah, a battle across the stars and galacticas.
Let's stay here the whole show, Mike.
See.
Ivanova just randomly says, I hope the captain's okay. Makes no sense in context, but gets us to the next scene. Logan did kind of give a recap of this, which is Sheridan, who is Tron, our captain, our Picard, has figured out where the Vorlons are going to strike next. And he has also, in a previous episode, tricked the Shadows into going there as well.
Yeah, that was the Bryan Cranston guest starring episode where Bryan Cranston gave his life to get the false information of the Shadows for this.
Did he have weird makeup?
He had weird hair.
Yeah, definitely weird hair. Maybe he's doing like a little Centauri thing, or he's like starting to go that direction. Yeah.
Okay.
It's why, and yeah, there are some bizarre guest actors on this show. There are some, who knows? There's a weird amount of overlap between Batman the Animated Series. I think every major character but a Batman and a Robin is represented. He gets Two-Face, Mr. Freeze, Batgirl, just wild.
I love all the behind-the-scenes comments that JMS was making at the time. Like, I don't know who that bit actor was, but he did a great job in that role.
Yeah, this was pre-Malcolm in the Middle Bryan Cranston, which is wild. That is also
this was Power Rangers era Bryan Cranston.
Wait, Bryan Cranston was on Power Rangers?
Yeah, he voices a monster in there. That's one of the reasons why he's Zordon in that movie they made, because they're like, hey, you want to come back? He's like, yeah, I could do the paycheck, and I've done this before.
Oh, sorry. I got to hop you, too. I got to go find that and watch that episode. All right, anyway, but so that's what's going on. We've got this setup, and it's like the final piece of it, which is Sheridan is blowing up a viewing station so that they'll be able to, like, intersect this. He's got all of the major pieces coming together. And
I thought that in this scene, this had some of the best CGI I've seen so far in the series. They really upped their game at this point, because before this, it's about Roblox level or like StarCraft 2 cutscene level.
I was definitely curious, Logan, having not seen this and having no nostalgia, how did the CGI prosthetic makeup, et cetera, play to you as a first time viewer?
So here's the thing. The stuff that bothers me about the cheapness of the show isn't the CGI. I really don't care about that because I'm used to 90s CG and it doesn't look any much worse than some of it. Like, they're trying to do certain things and it looks kind of video gamey and it doesn't bug me. What bugs me is some of the design choices with that are in their control, which are like set design. Like, what's her name? Ivanova.
Claudia Christensen Ivanova, yeah.
Yeah, her freaking, they go to her quarters and it just looks like some bad guy's back room in a nightclub in like a New York undercover episode. Like, it is so 90s design-wise from the papers in the background. Like, it's got this weird, like, Encarta box type of, like, design on the back. The bed is kind of like some teen's waterbed-looking type thing. It's very much very 90s aesthetic instead of, say, on Deep Space Nine, where it was more industrial stuff like that. They could have saved money by having kind of just more of a flat, like, military type look to that scene and that design instead of whatever 90s stuff. That made it look weird. Some of the alien costumes and designs are a little overcomplicated. Like, I made fun of the Shi'ar guy's head stuff. That's the thing that kind of is just stands out where you're like, this is kind of 90s cheap. I can live with the CG. That's just a byproduct of the time. And it honestly looks fine. And even the shadows when they show them talking and it's like kind of just weak CGI, that didn't bug me at all. It was really the other design stuff that was in their control that kind of brought it down a notch for me and was kind of noticeable in certain areas. Because I've seen shows with lower budgets and like movies with lower budgets make more with less. And it's just, that's a creativity thing and kind of just, it's a little too jambled all over the place. There needs to be a little more cohesion with some of the design aesthetics that they have there.
Yeah, I think a couple things that they always do for all the characters, they try to give them like personal things in all their quarters, make them like that part of their character design with what they do around there. And it did not come across in this episode at all. The other thing is like what I've noticed a lot too, and the quarters are just lit really badly for how they're doing TV. It's almost like what you're saying about the military quarters would have been a more definite decision, or like they needed something more cohesive to make it all look like one thing, as opposed to everybody's different. We're not showing it off well.
Yeah. And you kind of like on the whatever the bird planet, bird hair planet is.
Centauri Prime.
Yeah, like you start to see a little more of, okay, this is kind of an alien chamber, like emperor chamber and stuff, and that's fine. But it's like when they go to other areas, it just feels weird. Even the guards' costumes kind of bothered me a bit, because like I don't see that coexisting with some of the other design aesthetics that we see in that planet or with the other people that we see on Sheridan's ship at all. There's just not enough cohesion there, where you see that with, say, even Firefly or, you know, Deep Space Nine, which I don't think we have to get into the history of this show for Deep Space Nine, but you see that with there, and even like other sci-fi shows that would have been of this era. Like, I feel like there's a little more cohesive thought in terms of design and making sure that the world's. And I understand that they're all alien races and stuff, so by nature, there has to be a little bit of difference in there. But you can do that and still have it kind of feel similar in scope in terms of just this is a singular show, even though these are different races and things like that. And I feel like there's, like I said, her aesthetic for her lounge or her quarters is so 90s coded. It just, everything in the background looks 90s.
We actually start in episode one of the season, which is by now that they've kind of figured out the CGI. They've really figured out the prosthetics. Earlier seasons, it didn't look as good. Even the peacock hair looked ridiculous. You could see the putty, people's costumes had moved. They figured it out. The one thing that was kind of missing that I don't even know if they figure out by the end of Babylon 5 and season 5 is set design. They do the same thing as Deep Space Nine. This is all filmed in a hot tub factory, so they're able to redress sets, reuse rooms. But then, yeah, the decisions they make when they redo stuff, they make odd choices. And for what it's worth, on director's commentaries in the Lurker's Guides, you can go online. That's like the website that has all of the old forums discussing Babylon 5 and J. Michael Straczynski chiming in on what he thought. I think he agrees on set design quite regularly.
I think I saw a couple of suits from the 1996 NBA draft hanging on that woman's wall. That's the type of
that's
just fabric choices that they had going on there.
And the I will say the scene you are discussing, we'll briefly talk it, which is Lorian, who is the oldest alien in Ivanova, are kind of hanging out for the first part, right? Picking up all the old first ones to get ready for everything. So everybody's coming to the same spot. And initially she's like, we got 24 hours to the fleet. We got to go. We got to go. And then randomly she's like, okay, I'm going to stop by my quarters. And her quarters are back on Babylon 5. So they weren't a spaceship. She goes back to her quarters and they randomly have a philosophical thing. And she even said, she's like, why are you in such a hurry? That scene was filmed in a prior episode and I think was added to make this go ahead. And Mike, I know you and I have talked at length about this. Just sometimes there seem to be scenes in multiple episodes of Babylon 5 that are there because it seems like they ran out of time. And they're like, we need to fill 42 minutes. We get to listen to Garibaldi try on hats.
Well, this, like we were talking earlier before the episode about all the compression that the few episodes around here face. Like he was just trying to stuff. No, I need to get this in. I need to get this in. I need to get this in. And this feels like a whole scene of him trying. Okay, I wanted to make this theme at some point about like everybody should embrace life. And it's just a remarkable illusion. So I'm just going to put it right in here and see if it fits.
And so here's what I'm going to do. We have two plot lines in this. We basically have the end of the Shadow War, the Shadows and the Vorlons fighting with all the younger races. And we have the penguin, the Emperor Penguins, about to get destroyed and them having an existential crisis. We'll talk both of those. I'm going to briefly just breeze through a bunch of scenes that get us to that first plot. Everybody.
One thing first, though. That dude that the Emperor Penguin cuts the head off of, most car salesman-looking motherfucker I've ever seen cast in anything. He's such, like, within 2 seconds of him, I'm like, oh, this guy definitely killed his girlfriend and 100% deserves to die. It was like, oh, is that guy lying to him to get him to kill his ally? And then when he comes in, I'm like, oh, no, he was telling the truth. He absolutely poisoned that dude's girlfriend. No way.
That's the guy who Londo was working with to make the genocide of the other people in the very first season. So they go way back like that. So this is like him finally, like, getting rid of at least some of those shackles.
And now, Dre explains.
So getting everybody into position, we have Lorian, the oldest of the first ones, with Ivanova, our tough nose, I don't want nothing, kind of getting ready. They find a clever way to swap them around. We have Marcus, who is our ranger, like one of our badass people, talking with Lita Alexander. Now, this is a lot of names to throw, but we get everybody in one place. Lita Alexander is a telepath who has been modified by the Vorlon. So she is the most powerful non-shadow Vorlon telepath in the galaxy.
That's the connecty woman who does the okay, because that I had questions about. I didn't know who that was. All right.
And yeah, well, we, you know, this is to get everybody in one place and to move the plot along. We get a lot of major characters having like random discussions with each other. So Marcus and Lita are basically saying, why are we going to Coriana 6 instead of Centauri Prime? Marcus calls the numbers cold and unfeeling. And I'm like, no, the numbers tell us why we're going to Coriana 6, because Coriana 6 doesn't have defenses and has 6 billion people. Centauri Prime only has 3 billion people. So we get in position. They're going to Coriana 6, where the Vorlons are coming to destroy, because the Vorlons are going to all of the planets that have shadow influence and destroying them. The shadows have gotten upset and have started either taking out the Vorlons or destroying Vorlon territories. That was the fake information. So Sheridan fed the shadows, hey, there's a Vorlon base right by Coriana 6. So everybody is heading to Coriana 6 and Centauri Prime is all alone. We hope it'll be okay.
He's red harvesting them, pretty much.
Ooh, what I'm missing the reference, so fill me in.
Red Harvest is a novel by Dashiell Hammett. It's kind of the, it's, but not kind of, it's the thing that Yojimbo and Fistful of Dollars ripped off, where it's the guy gets the two warding sides to go against each other, and that, like, it's pretty much.
I was about to ask if it ripped off Yojimbo, so that's fantastic.
Nah, they both, for all of the complaints Kurosawa makes about Leone ripping off Yojimbo, it's took that from Red Harvest, so yeah.
So Sheridan is the leader. Sheridan and Delenn are like the people who put all this together. So they were already there. Ivanova's catching up. Lorian is all of his kids, like ready to go in the station wagon, ready to hit the road, which we'll find out about later. That is the stage set for this big war that has happened. And right via
Is it Lorian's kids, though? I mean, I'd see that, but wouldn't it be like his old drinking buddies if they were all the first ones together?
He phrases it, the lore we have been given is that Lorian is the oldest first one, and he has kept using the language of children. So the implication we get is it goes Lorian, first ones, including the Shadow and the Vorlon. But the Shadow and the Vorlon are the only one that completely stuck around. The other ones kind of, you know, hermit uncles that, you know, didn't do a lot. And then we have basically the grandkids. So that's kind of the... Yeah, that was said. Okay, the other setup we get, right, is Centauri Prime. And we'll probably just go through this entire thing, which is Centauri Prime, Londo Mollari, Emperor Penguin, made a pact with the devil, with the used car salesman, who is Mr. Morden. And they use the Shadows, the most powerful race in the galaxy, to basically go and take out all of their enemies. But the Shadows' philosophy is chaos. Their philosophy is once every 1,000 years, they come around, they start a bunch of civil wars, and their logic is basically the military-industrial complex. We start a bunch of civil wars between planets. Some of them are going to die, some are going to lose, but the ones that win their wars, they're going to be ingenuitive in making new technologies. It's going to be like NASA. They'll do new stuff, and they'll grow stronger and stronger. So we have the Shadows, who are basically Apocalypse mixed with the Brood. We have the Vorlons, who their philosophy is a little different, where they're going, we will give you the information and we will give you the upgrades as we see fit in our own time. So, you know, they go to Earth, they introduce telepaths. They like do the genetic splicing of humans to introduce telepaths. One of their backstories is their home planet in 1,000,000 years is going to be open for Earth to go. So their philosophy is, we will give you what you need to know. You tell us who you are, and if we like who you say you are, we will help you. We have the two philosophies fighting each other. Your point on the child soldiers, man, Charles Xavier, right? Who does that as well?
Psychic child soldiers, Charles Xavier.
Yeah, this is just X-Men, which is, oh, holy cow, and that's why you're here. Oh my, it all ties together. We brought up X-Men. Logan has to appear. This makes complete sense.
Is the head Vorlon named Professor V?
To be my V-Man.
Okay, so Centauri Prime, deal with the devil. The Shadows cause chaos, and they basically, another thing that Mike astutely noticed, I think others have as well, is they're middlemen, right? The Shadows don't really have an identity. The Shadows get other people to fight each other. The Shadows are the classic Elon Musk, we have an idea. And that is really revealed in this episode. So they work through the Centauri to cause chaos in the galaxy. The Vorlons have gotten in a fight with them. So Centauri Prime was the biggest ally of the Shadows. And Londo Mollari is this cursed character that wanted all this power, made a deal with the devil, realizes it's bad, keeps trying to get out of it. One of the like setups we get is he was realizing he was wrong to team up with the Shadows because they committed genocide against the Narn, lizard people that don't show up at all this episode. Which is really rough because they're really integral to the plot. And when everything goes down, they're nowhere to be found, Mike, which is kind of rough. Anyway, so that's the setup we've got. Is Londo has multiple times tried to do the right thing and kind of gets pulled back in. And one of the things we find out is he got in a petty squabble with a political rival that he thought they were like jabbing at each other. And this guy killed his girlfriend. And we discover Morden killed his girlfriend to get him to keep squabbling with this other guy. And the Emperor, the evil Emperor who teamed up with the Shadows, knew about it and said, I'm not going to let Londo know about it because we want to keep in league with the Shadows. But now that the Emperor is dead, Londo finds that out. Londo is doing his best to say, all of the pact I made with the devil, the Shadows have put their ships on my planet. How do I get rid of them? He's trying, you know, and he's basically doing kind of an Ocean's 11 style heist with all of the members of Centauri to get him off. The Shadows have landed have put a bunch of their military supply on Centauri Prime, which is why the Vorlons are coming to destroy it. They have planet killers that can destroy it. And Londo's, please take your ships off. And Morden correctly goes, why should we? And even if you could destroy it, you know, he basically makes the point, this is the Air Force. They're grounded, we can destroy them. And Morden goes, yeah, our sensors are better than anything you lower races have. If you try and attack them, we're going to go up. So the Ocean's 11 style thing that Londo does is he gets everybody on Centauri Prime. It spells out WITS, by the way, is the behind the scenes thing. He calls four different departments in government together. And the acronym for the four he calls, it's like war, infrastructure, transportation, and strategy or something. WITS, clever, right? He gathers his WITS, hilarious. he convinces them to make bombs all around the island that the shadows are on and blow it up without anybody knowing. So that's the Ocean's 11 style kind of, oh my God, everybody was putting all these things into place behind the scenes that nobody saw.
I just remembered something hilarious. When he's throwing that shit around all of the like stuff, like he's just tearing his entire quarters apart and shit, he sits down and right next to him is, I think, a photo of himself by himself. Like,
that is so perfectly Londo, actually.
And it's just, I was like, that's really hilarious, and that has to be intentional. Is he like a narcissist type guy where that's just a funny intro? Okay, all right, yeah. Because like, I thought it would be a picture of the woman that he loved who died, and I'm like, no, that's not a woman, that's him. That's why he's just, yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, Londo is the best, and he has a push-pull relationship between being self-motivated and doing things for the greater good. He finally does something for the greater good, which is he tries to get Morden to leave the planet. Morden says no. He kills Morden's shadow associates because Morden and agents of the shadows are always surrounded by these.
That was badass.
Glad it played. And by the way, behind the scenes, we are told that the shadows vanish, so they have some self-defense mechanism predator thing that if they die, they just immediately disappear. It's not just plot convenience for CGI. It makes sense.
Wait, you said that when they die, they disappear?
That's what we are told.
Then why the fuck did Londo say, now we got to clean up this mess if there was nobody?
He was referencing, because they just do a splatter shot to the two shadows, and so they shoot up the wall because they don't know exactly what they're shooting at. They just, you know, shotgun blast where they know they're going to be.
Yeah.
What we are told is that they run out of the way really quick, so they don't want time for it. So he's, oh, we're going to have to paint the wall that we just blew up, even though it's CGI. So to your point, he says that line, there's nothing on the wall because it was CGI and the aliens disappear. So that line is a little out of place. But here's where I want to come back to prophecy. I'm sorry, this is an important tangent we have to take on this episode. So the line we were given, this Lady Morello says to Londo, to save yourself from your fate. One I love, because she says to save yourself from the fate of becoming emperor and dying at the hands of your greatest rival. To avoid that, there are three things you can do. She said, you must save the eye that does not see, which would have been standing up for Jakar. What I love about this reading in the lore is, what she's actually saying is if you'd stood up for Jakar, you would have gotten killed and avoided everything. So she's not wrong, but I do love this like bullshit fortune teller philosophy that we're getting. Because like, he's like, how do I save myself? She's like, step one, just let yourself die, which technically accurate. You must not kill the one who is already dead. Apparently, she is talking about this scene because the backstory we are given via Sheridan, so our captain, who is nowhere to be seen in the scene,
who has also died and come back at one point.
Which is when I always heard the must not kill the one who's already dead. I thought they were referring to Sheridan, but no, they're referring to Morden, because Morden was alleged to be dead. He is an agent of the shadows. He's probably controlled in some manner or other. So,
well, we found pretty conclusively that these thralls of the shadows are usually humans or other aliens who have died, and then they get kind of injected so they can just kind of puppeted by the shadows. That's what Morden is now.
And we do wind up with a vampire situation, like how much of their personality is still the original, but Morden is that.
I'm just going to guess he was a douchebag before he died.
His comic backstory apparently is that his wife and kid are lost in space and the shadows convinced him to join that way. I prefer that he was just always a douchebag.
I'm going to say they're probably dickheads too.
Going for blood.
Fuck them kids.
Little shit.
No sympathy for Logan MJ. Okay, so that's kind of what we know, that Morden was alleged to be dead and came back. Londo could have known this, but doesn't really, and he technically isn't really dead. So she's like, I'm going to help you out with the prophecy. Don't kill the one that's already dead. She's talking about this, and I'm like, no, that is not, that's such bullshit. But I also respect it from like the fortune teller. You don't know the prophecy till after. It doesn't even make sense. But I
would have
feel,
liked you said, yeah, don't cut off the head of the guy who betrayed you. Just get really, yeah, leave no questions about what she's saying.
To be fair, Londo's kind of a dick and no one likes him. So I could also buy that she's just
I could
fuck
sense
him.
That.
She's like, I'm going to give him really cryptic stuff. He's never going to figure it out. Because, as mentioned, he kills the shadows. He blows up the planet where the shadow aliens are on, and he cuts off Morden's head for Beer, who gets to wave at it. This was the other point I brought up, which is Morden asks everybody what they want. Jakar and Londo, two of our bigs that we don't see Jakar this episode. We do see Londo. They got what they wanted, not the way they expected. Veer was like, fuck you, Morden. I just want you dead. And he gets it. But Veer is the only person that asks for a true of heart thing and in a straightforward manner.
I'm just picturing Dietrich Bader dressed like one of those fucking Shi'ar penguin guys and just saying, what do you want? Two chicks at the same time? With that fucking hair?
So Londo goes, okay, the Vorons are coming to kill us because we have shadow influence on our planet. We got rid of Morden. We blew up all their ships. We'll send him a message, say, hey, we're cool, right? And we get, you know, the ultimate monkey paw scenario where the Vorlon, they're like, you were touched by the shadows. You were influenced by the shadows. We will blow up the planet just to get rid of you. And Londo...
How is he touched by the shadows?
He was working with Morden directly.
Oh, so that is what... I thought it might be some other, like, more... But so it's just the general idea of him working with... Okay.
Yeah, like, for the first three seasons, he was constantly, like, the go-between directly for Morden and the Centauri Empire. Yeah, so it's... Yeah, he's got their stink all over him.
And I do love that he goes, how would they even know? And Veer's like, You sent the message, you dumbass.
You told them, dumbass.
It's like anybody else could have sent the message, but you did it. Plays into his narcissistic nature, right? He has to be the one that gets the credit.
He sent them a book like OJ, if I didn't.
Now, he asks, he's like, Veer, you got to kill me. We got to save Centauri Prime. We're fucked. And then at the last second, the Vorlon planet killer disappears. This happened a few times, Mike. I've got to say, these ancient races are not really great about having a mission. And if they get a message that something else is going on, this is the second time this has happened in the show where one of these big old races is getting ready to blow something up.
And they get a message. I thought there was a moon at first, but then that was no moon. It was a planet killer. Is that what you were saying?
There's a Star Wars reference in there. And also, Logan, see if you can catch the symbolism. When it eclipses the sun, Londo is in the shadows. And that, by the way, was the last part of the prophecy, because had Londo done nothing, the Vorlons would have just left. The shadows would have been on good terms with Centauri, and the shadows, we'll discover in a second, are about to leave. But because he had to get his revenge on Morden, he is damned himself and he is damned at Centauri. Damn you's monkey paw is what I put in the notes.
No, I just really liked how they tied the two stories together, too, because that's what we're going into next. We've noticed a lot of episodes before that they really keep separate the A and B and C stories. Like, they don't manage to connect them either thematically or have them intercut. And in this one, they actually do pretty good job because they're pretty separate. But this is where we get the Sheridan is actually Nuke's part of the fleets that are coming in as the shadows are coming in against the Vorlons. And that's when he calls in the first ones to come in that they found to hit the planet killer that the Vorlons have. And that's why they turn around. So they kind of pull it all back now that we were done with everything on Centauri and bring it all back to the end with the first one's races and the shadows and the Vorlons together.
I do like how Londo's, yeah, I fucked up. Everyone on the planet hates me. I think I'm going to go back to Babylon 5. And then that other guy's, okay, sure.
For what it's worth, I'll give a couple of points ahead. They do a really good job of that when it does happen, where they're all like, what the fuck are you doing here? And it blows up in his face, needless to say, one of the few good parts of season 5. I think we might agree, Mike. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, we've got the Yojimbo situation going on, but it's a little hilarious because these two super powerful races aren't even noticing anybody else until, as Mike noted, first ones come up and blow up the planet killer. So that's alleviated. They're like, holy shit, we're going to hit him. And Sheridan has to use his nukes because that's one of his backstories. He nukes everything. He loves mining asteroids and using nukes.
Yeah, he seemed pretty easy on that.
This is like his third or fourth time in show using a hidden nuke to surprise attack the enemy. That's
another thing
maneuver
with me, like, is like, the couldn't you just You had to say nukes. Like, why not just come up with some sci-fi bomb term? Like, why is it specifically space nukes?
Yeah, like the Cylon torch or something. We've got this thing down.
Yeah, it's just, that's kind of like lazy. Like, it's just nukes. Like,
I'll give a slight defense, and I know Star Trek in the 90s fell prey to this too, which I do feel is executive meddling, of being told the audience isn't going to know what you're talking about. So, you know, in Star Trek, I think this was on Cracked at one point, right? Anytime you reference the past, you'll say two things we know and one thing made up. And we have a lot of, you know, the same names that are familiar. That's something we have made fun of a lot on this show, right, Mike? Is the...
I don't know. The audience at the time was already the type of people to actually sit down and watch Babylon 5. You could probably throw anything at them.
But see, that's the executive meddling is, you know, JMS is, let me just tell them they're fine. And some executive is saying, you can't call that a photon, blah, 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 blah. You got to call it a nuke so people know what it is. And you know.
The other thing is, I didn't know that because I didn't see that he had hidden the nukes in the asteroids because he did that earlier. So it just looked like I was like, those nukes just look like shit. That was one of the things. It just looked like an exploding turd. Like in Smith. Like I thought that was bad CG, but that makes a lot more sense now. Yeah.
I think we've noted that too, right, Mike? Like the gun, the blaster CG in general on the show is...
It's generally pretty well thought out, all of the space design for the different races. And this was kind of a little letdown in that it wasn't as clear. I think they went more for that big design of getting the CGI right for the first ones, that they didn't show so many of the cool designs, like why the Minbari comes out guns out versus not. The whole design of the mollusk ships and how they attack on the Vorlons were kind of lost on this episode.
It was pretty jump because there's so much in JMS in the bat, like on the Lurker's Guide, has been like, man, we had so many different things to render. That's also why... You wouldn't have caught this, Logan, but the avatars they use for the Vorlons in the Shadow are technically incorrect. They use an older version of one, and they also use the encounter suit, not what a Vorlon actually looks. That's a suit. That's not what they look like. So we get the Shadow what they look like. The Vorlon looks wrong, and the Vorlon's a dead Vorlon who's not around anymore, and it's because basically that's the rendering they had that they could do. They reuse renders, right? That's a classic animation trick. And JMS is just like, yeah, it should have been this way, but we didn't have the budget for that. So
we lost the render for this character, so we had to kill him off halfway through. Sorry.
Are you talking about like the main Vorlon guy?
Yeah, when there's this like brief, almost like Star Wars hologram. So we can explain that and get this into that, which is basically two main races about to fight. We get the nukes, we get their planet killer is destroyed. And then the trick, which Sheridan was planning this entire time, which he hasn't told anybody, which is kind of funny to me. He's told everybody, we all need to come to this place and attack. And if we look Lord of the Rings, Aragorn tells people, look, this is a suicide mission. We are distracting them so the hobbits can go around the back. That is our mission. Everybody knows. Sheridan has gotten everybody to come to this battle and is, we're not winning this. And everybody's like, wait, what? And he's like, trust me. And then his entire plan was to telepathically get the Vorlon in the Shadow to get into a dialogue and basically get into a you're not my mom, you're not my dad yelling match with them, and then have Lorien convince him to leave. That was his big plan. And I think that what you and Mike have both been saying about some of the parts earlier in the episode that don't flow, the Londo saying everything fast, the nukes, we have a lot of these things that are very quickly told to us. Where on a rewatch, you can pick it up, but it's kind of hard to pick up because we're going for it as like the reveal. And I would say on this episode, that is a little clunky.
Was the communication the first time we've seen this?
Which like the talking through or whatever?
When they talk through it and Russo from Lost has the cast of other characters as
like that negotiation psychic zone.
Yeah, is that the first time you've ever seen that on the show like that? And is that the first time we ever saw Nora Freeze talking to?
Yep,
that was weird. So yes. Yeah,
Nora Freeze from Batman the Animated Series.
Exactly. Can't miss
her. She was smoking hot, by the way, for a woman encased in ice.
True.
My beautiful wife trapped in ice.
And Mr. Freeze does make an appearance on a season one episode.
He's in there.
Of course he does. So,
Yeah, because what winds up happening is They're trying to convince the Shadow and the Borlon to talk. Lead Alexander, the most powerful telepath, is trying to break through. I got to ask Logan how this played, because Mike and I have been texting back and forth on it. Randomly, her eyes turn like bright blue.
Got the saucers.
And she looks and she says, "You thought we could not touch you. You were wrong." And I was like, who are you talking to? What is going? I didn't even know what was going on there.
It sounded like the intro for John Cena's Thuganomics.
Oh, if she had done that, if she'd done this.
You think you can touch me? You're wrong. Thug life. This is basic Thuganomics.
Yeah.
That's the exact
intro. I think that's exactly what they were going for, too, in that Space Vorlon way.
Yeah. So yeah, basically.
So they have done this before, though, where they've had that type of.
So the Vorlons have like psychic control, and they have they gave Lita all those psychic powers, but nothing like
that. They've done dream sequences and talking to people in their brain. We've seen that.
Mm-hmm. I can see them doing the cast thing before, but the Lady in Ice, was that brand new?
That's brand new.
So that's not like some woman in ice that Sheridan would know or anything like that. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. A design they only use, just like the Zerg from Grey 17. It's like a one time and it's out.
Okay.
The Shadows are talking to Delenn, and the Vorlons are talking to Sheridan. And they're doing it like in a mine kind of palace thing. We have seen that before. Vorlons we've seen talk as other people in dreams to people. So this isn't exactly new, and they're doing it through Lita, which it mostly tracks. And then Lorien, because he's so old, is able to touch him while they're in this mind thing and project it to everybody else.
He didn't touch them because he was like not touching you. And then something hit the ship and made his hand touch Sheridan. And that's how they knew that he was projecting it, which was like they couldn't just say, "Hey, nobody hit our fucking shit while we're doing this."
Russo from Lost and Sheridan Tron are having two mind conversations with two god races. And the two god races are like, "You need to worship one of us." And they're both kind of giving their pitch. And this was a little weird because Sheridan and Delenn are almost having a like duo discussion, but they're not together. So it's kind of splicing together, and they're both answering kind of the same thing. You know, the Vorlons are like, "Why don't you just listen to Dad? I'm only looking out for your best interests." The Vorlon and the Shadow are just getting pissed at Delenn and Sheridan because they are saying, Sheridan and Delenn are saying, "We don't need you." The metaphor we are giving is, you know, like an abusive parent relationship and then telling off.
Yeah, well, like by now, even before this episode, it's all been revealed that like it's just two bad parents fighting with each other who have kind of lost their way. So I'm not sure how much JMS brings this home with this whole thing, because it's pretty easy to see where he's going for with the whole multi-generational metaphor going on with, "Hey, we're the kids. We need to take over the galaxy. We need to confront our parents." And the big thing that didn't hit me well, it's like, wouldn't these two giant races just still swat him like flies? I mean, all he did was he used a nuke, but they're still like god races. So the story has to go a long way to convince me that they're not just going to smite him down and kick him aside.
No, because then they start to... Wait, why am I defending this?
Do it, yeah, Logan! Yeah. Defend
the show!
Okay, so they actually do kind of solve this, at least for me, with... Here's the problem. So I'll talk about the lackluster acting in certain parts of this, but when they're doing that, they try to destroy the ship, and they have one of those like turd missiles going straight for Sheridan's ship, and another race's ship has been part of this mind meld just throws itself in front of there like a porpoise in front of a torpedo coming for Batman and Robin in the 66 movie, mm-hmm. and takes that torpedo and blows up. And then they try to fire another one, and then another ship jumps in front from another race. So I think it's just, if to go back to the parent metaphor, if one parent tries to beat the kid and then another kid tackles them and takes a hit down, and then they're like, "What?" And then they try to swing again, and then another kid jumps in front of him. I think at some point they're going to be like, "Oh shit. Okay."
And the defense I could give, Mike, like agreeing with Logan. I'll stay here.
No, I agree with Logan too. I was actually going to bring up the Drazi ship later, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I think that's what led to the, oh, well, they're all going to sit. Because Cerdan says, we're all telling you to fuck off. It's not just, you know, humans and Russo from Lost and fucking Shi'ar penguins. It's all the other races who I have not seen so far in this show, so I can't say what other comic book characters they are. But, you know.
But to that, because we do know, is this performative, the metaphor we are giving these are two parents fighting and involving their kids. And so when Sheridan says, we don't need you, we can stand together now, Mike is right. They could easily just evaporate them. But shooting just a tiny missile or making everything colder, they're kind of saying, prove it. And I'll agree with Mike. I get to agree with both sides. I love doing this. To Mike's point, because this happens so fast in one episode, which we know behind the scenes why, JMS ran out of time. He had a bunch of story he wanted. He only had 22 episodes to tell it. So he basically was like, I'm going to cram everything in. And he has three civil wars to wrap up too on the backside, which he does do. And that stuff is amazing. We don't get as much time with this storyline to breathe.
I don't think it needs the storyline. I think just the acting can sell it. Sheridan, when Sheridan's giving that speech, to go back to Star Trek, he's giving it like a Starfleet captain, be it Picard or Sisko or whatever, would give just in a random episode to a random alien race. No, we must find peace, blah, blah, blah. He needs to be as angry as Sisko was when he started bombing a fucking planet and saying, I'll send another one. And he doesn't hit that level of desperation and anger that you have standing up to your parental alien daddies. He's a little too calm in there. He needs to hit the bass in his voice. He needs to put a little Batman.
He's got to get the hell out of our galaxy.
He doesn't sell it at all. You need to hit that Harrison Ford, I just want my family back, or get off my plane type of level of anger that he needs to convey there. Are the lizards, like, I know he hates the penguin guy, but is he on okay terms with Sheridan?
Yeah. I mean, he winds up in okay terms with everybody, which is wild.
No, but like, as of this episode, is he?
Yes.
But then why the fuck didn't they have any of them in, like, the crew of the ship with the other fucking guys? Like, they had a couple of the Russo race.
By this point of the series, like, a lot of them are the security for Babylon 5. Like the Narn lizard people are supposed to be the security officers.
Yeah. So they needed to have that more to sell this more of this is all of the races coming together so that, you know, you have that stuff. But also, again, back to my point, like, yeah, Sheridan needs to sell that scene and he did not get into that place. It's, yeah. You have to be able to get to that place where you're just like, fuck you, Dad. I can make my own dinner now.
Yes. Pretty much. And I got nukes to prove it, Dad. There's so much.
He should have tied his belongings in a bindle and tried to walk away.
Taking my bindle going out of here, man.
Yeah. No.
With apologies, I am trying to look through the scenes just to see if there is a Narn ship. They literally have a Final Fantasy. Everything shatters when they come out of the dream world. That's the graphic they use. And I just know it's because, as Mike knows, I've been playing some Final Fantasy recently. They literally have a Final Fantasy graphic when they leave. But yes, I'm not seeing any Narn. Agreed. It's interesting where, and we've had this a few times before on the show, where what you're saying, Logan, is like narratively this all ties, but there are things that, you know, could have been done better. And I've said the same. And MVB has now noticed this, Mike, and this happened on a few shows, like the same Game of Thrones problem, the pacing problems, whatever. And this is a fun, brief tangent to kind of end the discussion, because I think we're basically through the episode. Logan said at the very beginning, which is, they tell everybody to leave. Lorian, the granddad, is like, yeah, you really should go, your abusive parents. And it's the weirdest thing, because used car salesman voice is being the voice of the shadows. So we have like bad CGI for the shadow and the Vorlon. And they're being voiced by the real Kosh, who has been dead, and by Morden, who is the used car salesman guy. And Morden is like doing a very soft-spoken voice to act like a child.
You don't need to be alone?
can you come with us? Can you leave with us? And he's, yeah. They're like, okay, we'll go. And you're like, and I agree
can
with Mike.
Can we get ice cream, space daddy?
That would have made it better, honestly, if they'd done
room
that.
Grandpa's back. He's got stuff for everybody.
Yeah. Because that is the end. Literally, these two big races, it's almost like I got punched in the nose once. They cry, and then Grandpa's like, we're going to go. Don't worry. And then,
don't worry. We're going to go to the Outer Rim, where all your puppies are, and Frodo, and all of that. And they're going to be on a big farm, and we're going to run. And yeah. So, yeah, the Valorians and the Shadows are like, yeah, we'll go with you, Space Daddy, to outer space. And then Sheridan's, looks like it's time for us to have our third age. And then he just puts his hand around his nuke weird girlfriend and just, yeah.
They already had a cuck episode. Not even joking. Not making jokes. I'm being 100% straight. They have a weird set of turn-ons with guns, and they have a weird sexual relationship, which does tap. It goes basically from zero chaste, just kissing each other on the cheek and hand, to let's get all my friends to watch us have sex. Like, that happens this season.
Yep. There's the Minbari bonehead ritual about boneheading.
Yeah.
There's a lot that did not come in. The lizards didn't come in. None of the Narn. None of the word bonehead. That's the first time we've said bonehead this episode, because there hasn't been much Minbari besides Delenn.
So, yeah, in conclusion, this is exactly the show that I thought it would be, to tell you guys. My issue, again, so my issues before I had seen any episode of Babylon 5 was that the budget on the not CG stuff was not spent in the right area in terms of set design and stuff. Like, they could have done more with less. I will say, the lady in the ice, Nora Freeze, mm-hmm. from Batman, fucking cool as hell design. Loved every aspect of that. That's, put more of that shit into the other things.
But that's what's fascinating with you saying that, though, is I didn't like it, but I'm realizing I didn't like it because of how out of place it is. And that's what made it weird, is you're like, I like the design, but it's jarring, and it's jarring because it's not like the other stuff. And you're like, yeah, do more stuff like that more regularly.
That's why I like it, though, because it's jarring because it's an alien race, or it's supposed to be their higher race than humans and stuff. So I like that it's kind of weird shit like that.
Well,
and then the other thing is just the acting is in their control. Like, you could have told Sheridan, hey, man, go get a cup of coffee and give us another take, because you're like at a 6 and we need you at a 9 for this at the least. Give him some caffeine. Jesus Christ.
It's okay. Fascinating tangent there. JMS wrote every episode and, according to himself, said that he was very controlling of the script. That being said, Bill Mummy, who plays one of the boneheads, we don't see much in this episode. He is there, I think. But he's just like voice of the ship a few times.
Sound
oh, this
ship
person
with
gets
them.
Hit. Yeah.
There's a few boneheads with him.
Yes. But Lanier is there, but we don't see much of him. But he was Bill Mummy, who was Kid in the Cornfield in the Twilight Zone episode and the little kid on Lost in Space. Like, he was on both Babylon 5 and Star Trek. And he mentioned that on Star Trek, they were much more controlling. And then people on this crew are like, oh yeah, the hours weren't that bad. Star Trek, shows like Star Trek Notorious, you have like long shoots and stuff that people would complain about. You know, Chevy Chase would complain about that on Community. So
Chevy Chase, I'm not going to listen to him.
Yeah, but what I'm pointing out is when you listen to behind the scenes on the show, it was very low budget, but it also was like a friendly atmosphere. When you compare it to Star Trek, where they're like, we're going to get the take exactly right, and we're going to stay late. Because I'm just noting that there are actors that played on both Star Trek and Babylon 5 that are like, oh yeah, the Star Trek sets were much more grueling, despite the fact that Babylon 5 had someone much more in control and much more demanding on like the final output. Star Trek, like you're saying, put their money into the directors who are like, we are going to stay here until you get the take right. Whereas Babylon 5 was like, we are going to get the story right. And exactly what you're saying, right? Instead of spending all this time making sure every single plot beat we wanted in this episode went in, including like the weird philosophical debate between Lorian and Ivana about God races, which is, you know, shoehorned in. And it's shoehorned in because that's the last time we can have that discussion on the show, because Lorian is gone after this episode. Like, they could have spent, I think we both said it. It's like, yeah, stretch out some of these other scenes to show more of the pathos. So
I could accept the
oh, we didn't have longer hours on like just a random episode of Babylon 5. I can't accept that if this is the conclusion of 4 years of plot. Well, actually, this is interesting because it does go to the Game of Thrones thing. I think that a big complaint with the last season of the Game of Thrones thing, while people had some issues with just how it ended and they were always going to have that, I think if they literally had just done the same amount of episodes as they had done in previous seasons, there would have been far fewer complaints because they just didn't let anything breathe. And that's not a one for one thing to this, but man, again, give him like three more takes. Tell him to get in there. That's like regular directing on that. That's not, again, this is not just a episode of the week or whatever stuff. This is the magnum opus of everything that you've led to so far. They needed to have him get to that special place like Luke Perry in that episode of 90210 when he yells out, "Let the bridges I burn light my way." That has more conviction than this. It does. Go watch that Luke Perry clip right now, and you're going to see that compared to this Sheridan thing. And you're like, yeah, no, Luke Perry, act him under the table right there. Just, yeah, no. Tron guy let me down in that. Well, and that is also one of the greatest phrases of all time. Let the bridges I burn light my way. What a great episode of TV.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, Tron let me down. That was one of the great phrases.
Yeah, you got to check this out. So the one thing we do kind of usually end on, and this is funny because we got you at the end of a major plot point, Logan, is, are you going to check out any more Babylon 5 after this?
Not really. It's not an issue of, it's, if I had caught an episode when I was younger, maybe I might revisit this and stuff. There's just too much stuff to see, and I know, like, most of the stuff in terms of him not getting to tell the story that he wanted to in terms of the weird season five and then that spinoff show, like, Crusade,
yeah,
that he has. And then I know that there was some mental health issue with the first captain who disappears after season one. And I know there's too many curveballs and weird tangents within this show that it never gets to exactly what he wanted it to be. So unless I was part of this from the get-go, it's not really a show for me where it's like the, oh, I need to go revisit this and stuff when there's like tons of other things. And I want to be clear, like, I know I've given J.M. Straczynski a lot of flack in here. I like him. Like, he's written some comic books I really fucking love that don't, not even the superhero stuff. Like, I'm talking about, like, Midnight Nation is a fucking fantastic 12-issue limited series that you can get that's just fantastic, and I hope one day gets adapted. And he's done a bunch of other stuff that's great. So even if I need like my J.M. Straczynski fix, there's other places I can get that.
I still need to catch up on Sense 8, which I've heard is amazing.
Yeah, so that's why, like, Sense 8, that's also another show that kind of, I don't know if they did conclude that, like, to his status. I think they had the movie that wrapped it up, right?
Yeah, but, like, but it wasn't what he intended to do again.
But still, and that seems to be a general theme with Straczynski, is that just he doesn't get to end things the way he wants to, because that, spoilers for his Spider-Man run, is exactly what happened with him in Spider-Man. So, like, I'm familiar with that. He's written a lot of stuff that I like. There's other stuff that I would be willing to check out. Like, I haven't seen Sense8. I would watch that before I watched this. Also, just it being on Tubi would be another thing that kind of, I don't want to watch the ads, to tell you the truth. Yeah, it's, I don't regret watching this. I don't regret the podcast or anything. But as I mentioned a couple of times, it's exactly the show that I thought it was. For better or worse, I don't mean that as a, like, an insult. I don't mean it as a compliment. It's just what I thought it was.
That might be the most fair assessment we've gotten from any guest on anything.
Yeah, no, it's, look, I like sci-fi stuff, and I've watched it. I watched, like, Buffy. I watch every single episode of Supernatural. So it's not like I'm not, it's not like weird genre shows that might not be as great as their fandoms make them out to be, or, you know, uncommon for me, or getting into that stuff is not. I understand why people like Babylon 5. I understand why it still has a bunch of fans who make podcasts about it, and, you know, people who enjoy revisiting it and seeing, oh, I like this character, oh, I like this arc. But if you're telling me, like, would I go and sit through that, I know too much about it to say, no, I wouldn't. And it's not a thing that would really change on there. Like, I would just, I'd rewatch Deep Space Nine. I feel it's kind of like a Pepsi Coke situation. You're either a Coke person or a Pepsi person, and I'm a Coke person in this.
So, all right, Logan, with that in mind, understood the most cogent point that makes sense about not checking up more Babylon 5. And I, especially since we showed you the end of one of the major plot points, like at best, I think Mike and I could recommend two or three more episodes that would wrap everything up for you. Is there anything you think the audience should check out
instead of this?
Just in general, because that's the name of the show, right? We told you, hey, Logan, you got to check this out. And you're like, thanks. So we're giving you a chance to be like, okay, maybe not Babylon 5. Maybe listen to a curator like Logan who has other ideas.
Okay. Yeah. So you can check out a bunch of my friends' podcasts, which I'm going to just plug, Himboos. So if you guys have any interest in Supernatural, which I'm guessing if you're listening to Babylon 5, you probably do. As someone who has seen every episode of Supernatural, Himboos, by my friends, our friends, Dave Bell and Tom Ryman over at the Gainfully Unemployed Network, is a fantastic watch-along podcast. They're on season one right now. Neither gentleman has ever seen the show, so they have no fucking clue what they're getting into. So if you have watched it before, it is a delightful way to watch it. They've also done a show called Fox Mulder's a Maniac, which is fantastic. And they have a Batman watch-along called Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, which is pretty self-explanatory. Also, check out our other buddy Adam Todd Brown's stuff at the You Don't Even Like podcast network. There's a ton of great things there. In terms of just things you can watch, I just watched I Saw the TV Glow, which very appropriate for this kind of podcast. It's a metaphor about certain things in terms, and it's framed around people connecting to a low budget genre show. But there's a much deeper thing in there that I don't want to get into because it kind of spoils it. It's a fantastic movie and you will not regret your time. And it's and only
I love that main actor, right? Detective Pikachu, that just happens to be in a bunch of stuff I've loved.
Justice
Smith. Yeah.
Justice Smith, who's from Detective Pikachu, Dungeons and Dragons, and a bunch of other things. He's a great actor. Mm-hmm. Also a bunch of cameos from 90s people who you'll recognize immediately, but fit the story. So yeah, that's a great thing. And yeah, so cool. Oh, also check out Nerd with Jeff and Dre. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Check out
Mike Slater's magic cards that he paints.
Yep. MikeSlater.com. No, it's great. By the way, I keep saying this. You hit so many wavelengths, card collector, you know, messing with old art, nice CSS, mobile integrated as well. Yeah. MikeSlater.com. Definitely go check that out.
If you let me, Dre, I have one plug too for Karen, because she, my wife and my son, Annie, just started putting out their podcast. It's called Hey, Have You Read This Yet? Where it's more of a kid's podcast, but they're reading a book every 2 weeks and having a mother and son introduce books that they've read to each other. So that's Hey, Have You Read This Yet? On wherever you're getting your podcasts.
Oh, one more quick thing to plug. I mentioned earlier that book, Red Harvest, by Dashiell Hammett. Yeah. Dashiell Hammett's literally one of my favorite writers, so check out that book. It's fucking great. It's one of the best. I think it's been voted like one of the 100 best American novels of the last century. So yeah, check that out.
You're into the book section. And yeah, Sideways Stories at Wayside.
Sideways Stories at Wayside School. Yeah, that's their first episode they did it on.
The writer of that is fascinating.
Yeah, Louis Socker.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, yeah, we'll have to discuss pronunciations yet. No, we do not have time. We may have to have you back, Logan, because he is one of my favorite just writers. And I would love to hear more. But of course, we have gone past schedule time. I think we were all prepared for that. But this has been a blast. I've said many times to Mike, this is like my social life. So this is, you know, we're doing it on camera. We're getting, we're doing it in front of a microphone. We're getting production out of it. But honest to God, you know, if there was in another world where I could have time to go out and meet you two at a bar or a TGI Fridays or something and just, what did you do all night? I was like, we talked Babylon 5 and compared it to X-Men.
It's longer than we needed because only the strong shall survive podcasting.
It's a matter of grit. A matter of grit. You got to prove your worth. Yeah. So what's Logan? What are Logan and Mike up to? How's their life going? I don't know. But Logan had a really good point about apocalypse.
Cool. Yeah, well, Logan, it was really great to have you over this. Thanks for taking the time to do this with us.
Thanks for introducing me to a new haircut I'm probably going to go check out. I think I could pull off the weird shiar thing.
Into the sides, into the other side, into the back.
We can crowdfund that. Let's make it happen. Logan Centauri and Jeff is Stryker from WMIC Masters at a Comic-Con. Come on, people. This is within our budget. For the price of a Babylon 5 episode, we can make this happen.
The funniest thing is that Jeff and I have been to several Comic-Cons at the same time before we knew each other and never interacted at all, which is very weird.
All right. Well, that has been You Gotta Check This Out. Thanks. We are through the Shadow War, but guess what? There is still so much more Babylon 5 to go. Mike, what are we doing next?
Next, we're going to skip well forward into season 4 with episode 14, Moments of Transition. So if you're following along with us, that's the next one to watch at home.
Season 4, episode 14, Moments of Transition. If you're, you know, keep up, everyone. Of course, check out Logan on Blue Sky, which is the Logan Trent. And then, of course, WNBA, the best, one of the best WNBA podcasts. The only reason I feel a little remiss about that is, you know, told by two guys, but a great WNBA podcast, as well as WrestleMovia, which, oh my God, if you're a fan of professional wrestling and movies and the overlap, John Ryman, your co-host, maybe a future guest on a show, Mike, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
and Logan.
WrestleMovia crew out.
Absolutely love it. The last one I listened to was on a good movie. Not The Rundown. What was the other Rock one?
Oh, it was Walking Tall. Yeah.
Usually it's on so bad they're good wrestling movies. Occasionally it's on a good movie like Walking Tall, like a recent one. But the most recent one up as of this recording, I believe, is Santa Claus with Muscles. Delight to listen to.
That was with our guest, Eric Barnes, who you could also check out on Blue Sky. Eric,
I'm so behind. I need to catch up on that episode. I am so excited. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. You got to check this out.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, all.
Bye.
Only the strong will survive. I will say apocalypse.